We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. I'm guest host Kimberly Cronick, Director of Community Engagement at Illinois Public Media. And in this hour of Focus 580, we'll discuss the role of locally owned media in communities. The producers of our show are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and at the controls this morning is Henry Frain. And my guests in the studio this morning represent two Champaign-Urbana-owned media operations and one training ground for future journalists. They are Mike Howey, city editor of the News-Gazette, Tom Rogers, news director at WILL, and Rich Martin, associate professor of journalism and director of graduate studies in the Department of Journalism at Illinois. Welcome, gentlemen.
Morning.
Thanks for having us.
This program is part of a series called Will Connect. Will Connect is our multi-platform, multi-pronged approach to community engagement in which we try to increase the civic health of a community around a certain issue and where WILL tries to deepen our significance in the community by being a catalyst for marshaling the community's resources around an issue. On air, that sounds like programs like this one, in which we discuss topics that came out of our community listening sessions. This summer, Illinois Public Media held a series of community conversations on the economy in Vermilion, Champaign, and Macon counties. From those conversations, we created news and talk programs to reflect what we heard and to provide resources to listeners in need by partnering with social service agencies and first call for help organizations and directing listeners to those agencies. For more information on that project, you can visit our website, willconnect.org/economy. Today, we'll talk about the role of locally owned media in the communities they serve. And listeners, you're invited to be part of the discussion. In Champaign-Urbana, the number to call is 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. And before we get deep into the conversation, I want to let you know that hunger came up regularly in our community conversations. And this Monday night, Dave Dickey, Will's Director of Agricultural Programming, will host the Eastern Illinois Food Bank's third annual Hunger Symposium. It'll be Monday, September 28th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library. The goals of the symposium are to look at the root causes of hunger and poverty in Eastern Illinois, how they're connected and integrated, to inform you about hunger, poverty, data, and statistics, to look at the strategies in this area to combat hunger and poverty, and to get you involved if you're interested. That's Monday night, 7 p.m., Hunger Symposium at the Champaign Public Library. Okay, now on to our discussion on locally owned media. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. And as I mentioned, the media came up in all six community conversations that WILL facilitated this summer. Participants in those conversations told us how the media either helped or hurt their efforts, depending on which issues the media covered and how they covered them. Now, still today, most mid-sized communities have a daily newspaper and other local periodicals. In Champaign-Urbana, for example, we've got the Korean Times, a monthly newspaper called The Public Eye, a Spanish-language newspaper, I believe, that the News-Gazette publishes. Is that correct?
Not anymore? I don't believe we publish that anymore.
Okay.
There is another Hispanic paper, La Prensa, in town.
La Prensa. Great. So, Mike, I want to start with you. You're with the locally owned daily newspaper, the News-Gazette. Tell me, what do you see as the role of the News-Gazette in the communities that it serves, and how many communities are you currently serving?
You know, I don't know the exact number. We serve parts of 12 counties in East Central Illinois. Champaign-Urbana, Danville are the three largest, but we go into all the counties around us in some fashion, from a little bit of Iroquois on the northeast to Moultrie on the southwest. If you just draw a circle around that area, that's where we circulate.
It's a large area.
It is.
What is the role when you think about the paper, which has various departments, it's not just journalism. What, from your perspective as the city editor, what is the News-Gazette trying to do in the communities that it serves? What's your role? What do you see it as?
Fundamentally, it's to report the news.
Okay. And to what end is the reporting of the news from your perspective?
Well, I think our job is to keep local people informed about what's going on in their areas.
Okay. And do you see the News Gazette as apart from the communities it serves, as shoulder to shoulder, or something in between?
It would have to be something in between.
It's, okay.
In some ways we are apart. We have to be so that we can report fairly and accurately without bias. So to that extent, we are apart. To the extent that we live here, we shop here, we pay mortgages here, we're part of the community too. In a town this small, you can't not be part of the community.
When I was looking at your website at the founding of the News Gazette, I think it's over 157 years old now. Mm-hmm. It used to be – on your website, you talk about the role and the history of it, and it used to be that when it was first founded, editorials were right on the front page mm-hmm. of the paper. And now they're in a section called the editorial page, and on your website you admit that it sort of takes a conservative bent on the editorial page, but that the role is also to be active in the community. What does that mean? Active involvement in the community, it says here, in addition to striving for journalistic excellence.
Well, our active involvement, I suspect, varies from place to place within the newspaper. We have... right now, a growing involvement online with both our website, with Twitter, and with Facebook. Twitter, in particular, is a place where we are involved with the community in a different way from our print product, in a different way from the weekly newspapers that we own. The weekly newspapers' involvement, I'm ignorant of. I don't know a great deal about how they each interact. I know that they do. But they're in different towns and different counties, so I'm going to have to say I don't know a great deal about them.
So with the Twitter, how is that different from the print side? Tell us how you use – the News Gazette is using Twitter and how that works with the communities that you're in.
It works in a number of ways. It's a way for us to spread news almost instantaneously. But much more than that, it's a way for us to be part of discussions, if only to observe the discussions and to see what folks are talking about in a variety of ways. Just last night, we hosted a get-together of local folks who are on Twitter, had a few dozen people stop by and just talked so that we removed the internet from the discussion for an evening. But I believe that the folks who follow us on Twitter are just fabulous about telling us when news is happening right in front of them. So it's a great resource for us in terms of finding something out. It's 1,600 extra pairs of eyes and ears that we don't have. So we find out about traffic accidents. We find out about traffic backups, power outages, things that really affect people immediately. We're able to find that out and spread the word quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we'll come back to more on Twitter in a minute. I want to get to Tom Rogers right now, who's news director at WILL. Tom, the FCC license for this station is held by the Board of Trustees here at Illinois.
Right.
What is the role of Illinois Public Media, from your perspective, in the communities it serves, and how might that be different from the role of the News Gazette, which is a daily newspaper?
Well, Illinois Public Media, as you know, is several different things. We run one television station, two radio stations, and a fairly extensive online operation that's growing, just like I mentioned, with using the new types of social media and putting more of our product online for people to see and hear. So our role, again, my role in specific is to, like the News Gazette, to tell people what's going on in their community. I think a bigger role of public journalism, since we are public licensees, is to make sure that citizens are informed to the point that they can be more effective people in their society, to get maybe not to get people involved directly in their community, but certainly to give them the background of information to make those smart, those kinds of decisions.
And so I'll ask you the same question I asked Mike Howie of the News Gazette is, do you see Illinois Public Media overall as an organization, mm-hmm. or you can, if you're more comfortable just talking about news, as apart from the community, shoulder to shoulder, or something in between?
Again, as far as the division between being apart from the community to be a non-biased source to put a little bit of a firewall to make sure that we're giving the news as accurately as we can. But again, we also do take an active stake in what's going on in our community because, again, we live here. And the organization as a whole has that as part of its mission. And we've been talking over the past couple of years as far as expanding that role to become a little more active in being a catalyst for things to happen in communities, for people to use their own judgments and become better citizens and more involved citizens as well.
Good. We'll talk more about that in a little bit later. I want to get to Rich Martin, who is Associate Professor of Journalism and Director of Graduate Studies in the Department of Journalism at Illinois. Rich, what do you teach journalism students about the role of journalism in the communities they serve? And has that changed at all with other sources of news that have proliferated, such as blogging and other sources of news?
Well, basically I think my other colleagues in the Department of Journalism try to teach students is very similar to what Mike and Tom are talking about. It's basically giving citizens in a community the information that they need to make decisions and decide how to live their lives, make choices. And I think that's really at the bottom line what journalism is all about. There are lots of other things that we teach. We teach accuracy. We teach curiosity. We teach the importance of watchdog reporting. We teach a lot of the new media, new digital techniques. But the bottom line, journalism is about telling people what's going on and giving them the information they need to make decisions and make choices.
And despite other sources of news and the electronic age and the way people get information and the way people produce information and send it out, what would you say, is there always going to be a place for journalism? And do you feel that is going to survive?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think journalism is needed. I think it's essential to our society. I think it's essential to the democracy. I think, it's one of those things that the founding fathers protected in the First Amendment, and I think they did that with good reason and good judgment. And I believe it's necessary for us to do everything we can to maintain the integrity of our journalism so that what we produce is trusted and respected and incredible. There's lots of new media out there, but again, talking about the bottom line of journalism, if you're trying to do it well, do it responsibly, do it accurately and fairly, I think it will survive. It may be different from any form of media that we have right now. The newspapers are going through lots of hard times, but I hope that there'll always be journalism.
If I can interject, yes. I think there will always be a role that journalism plays. It may not be the same kind of role that we're familiar with right now because our media are so evolving so quickly. We had no concept of what social media was 10 years ago. What we and how things have evolved have maybe caught some of us off guard. Some of us who've been in the business for a while and who thought, the classic radio station with a news department, for example, is going to last forever, or the classic newspaper or what have you. We're all trying to adapt to that very changing new atmosphere in new technology and sort of feeling our way through. But I think at its core, the purpose of journalism, which is to you know, help people get become better citizens, to be sort of a public watchdog, will stay. What form that takes in 5, 10, 50 years, I don't think any of us can make an accurate prediction just yet.
We're talking this morning with Tom Rogers, news director of Illinois Public Media, WILL, whom you just heard, Mike Howie, city editor of the News Gazette, and Rich Martin, associate professor of journalism at Illinois. We're talking about the role of locally owned media in communities. And Tom was just talking about the importance of journalism and how that is important to a democracy, but the way in which it's done may change. That leads me to a project that the News Gazette and the Department of Journalism has been involved in, which is also connected with some work that WILL has done. I want to get into that right now. I also want to let listeners know that you can be part of this discussion. In Champaign-Urbana, the number to call is 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Rich and Mike, you're involved in a collaboration, I believe it's known as the Poverty Project. And those of us who read the News Gazette have seen feature-length stories on the front page about people struggling in this economic recession. Tell me about the relationship between the Department of Journalism and the News Gazette, if you have worked together before, and how is it that – what do you hope to do with this work known as the Poverty Project?
Well, Poverty Project is probably the shorthand title for it. It's a little broader than that, and I think we're trying to focus on what we would consider economic disparity in Champaign County. We have worked together before. We've had classes the past three spring semesters where students would partner with reporters and editors at the News Gazette to work on projects during the course of the semester. We've had we have a digital media class now where students are producing stories, features for the News Gazette's website. And, of course, we've always had students who did stories and gave them to Mike or to other editors at the News Gazette for possible publication. So I think there's been that partnership over the years. This project is funded by a grant from the Stevic Foundation, which is a community foundation of the News Gazette. There's a matching grant from the Knight Foundation, which is a journalism foundation out of Miami, and there's money from the university as well. And it's really intended to be a collaborative effort that will tell stories about what's going on in the community, so that citizens will understand what's happening with people perhaps who are either at or below the poverty level, and get those stories out. Those are important stories, I think, for us as for journalists to tell. And it's, I think it's very important that significant that the Stevic Foundation has put money into something as important as this, and that there's money coming in from the Knight Foundation. On the new technology side of it, we're excited about this because one of the goals of this project is to increase citizen access to the information. We're creating a website. Brant Houston, who is the Knight Chair for Investigative Reporting, has been actively involved in this and been working very, very closely with the creation of a website that will allow citizens to tell us what's going on in their lives, to tell us what conditions they're living in and under, and to get information about things that are happening here. So we're excited about that. It's still, I keep describing this as a grand experiment, and there's lots of things that people might ask questions about that I would have to say, I don't know, or we'll have to wait and see how we'll do this. But we're planning to use a lot of new technology and digital tools to try to increase awareness of issues out there and just help readers, help viewers, help listeners know and understand the community and help the community be a part of the overall story and process and tell us what's going on as well.
So with this opportunity here, it sounds like, am I hearing you right, that the sources for your stories that help reflect what's going on in the community, you're really digging deep into the ground level? not just the spokesperson of agencies or government officials. It sounds like you're really working toward that level. Is that true?
Yeah, I think the stories that we've done already reflect a concerted effort to bring in voices that are not typically heard or who are not typically read in the newspaper. And I think that once the website is up and running, there will be much more of that. There will be multimedia. There should be, you know, whatever a cell phone can do, we'll probably be doing that via folks out in the community.
I think people who live in at or below the poverty level are usually the people that are forgotten or ignored or invisible in communities. And I believe it's part of responsibility of journalists and whatever news organizations they work for to try to tell those stories so that they're not forgotten, so they're not ignored, and that they do have a voice, and that their stories are told. So, yeah, we're trying to get at the ground level that way. The people who are involved in the programs are also a big part of that too. So, you know, there are lots of that. We don't want to cut them out of it. But the people, the faces, the voices of people who are actually living the lives are important. Whether you're writing about this or writing about anything or telling stories about anything, it's the people who are involved. That's always the real important and compelling part of journalism. From my perspective.
And has the Knight Foundation emphasized certain things in this work that you've taken that are new to you or that reflect an earlier time in journalism? Tell us a little bit about the way the foundation is envisioning what might be different as a result of this work. Has that come up?
Well, I can't be a spokesman for the Knight Foundation. I know that they have historically been very interested in increasing citizen access, citizen involvement in the process of journalism and making information more available. And I think that's really what they're looking for. They're not telling us how to do something. They're giving us money to figure out how to do it and to make it work. And so, again, there is a part of this that's experimental. They've given lots of money to other communities, other organizations in other communities that are wrestling with the same kinds of things that we're doing. But, again, it's accessibility, it's community engagement, civic engagement that's really important to the Knight Foundation. And, again, I think to the Stevic Foundation for doing this.
So if I'm a person maybe who doesn't subscribe to the News Gazette, who doesn't I'm just a citizen here in Champaign-Urbana, how might I get involved in this project if I'm interested in the issue? How does it affect me at that level?
Well, I think it's going to be easier once our website is up and running because that's going to be primarily if you're not subscribing to the News Gazette, then although there are plenty of ways to get the News Gazette without subscribing it, most public libraries have it. So it's not like it doesn't exist anywhere. However, the website, which we are there's a fair amount of training involved to get up and running on, that's going to probably be the key to the interactive element with local folks who want to become involved. I think that that's going to be the easiest way for that to happen. And we have reporters out. Some of the classes at the university are focusing on this semester as well. So there are going to be some other ways too. But I do believe that the website, which is still probably a couple weeks away from being active, is going to be a major part of this.
One of the things Mike mentioned, you asked about Twitter. I mean, Twitter is one of the things that we will probably be using, will definitely be using to get the word out and get the word from citizens. Facebook is another tool, RSS feeds, mobile phone alerts. One of the really interesting things about this project is that we're finding out how many other parts of the university are doing things that are really connected with this whole, let's look at what's happening with economic disparity in the community. You've got library and information science people working on it. You've got community planning. You've got people in psychology who are doing projects. And there are probably other projects going on at the university that we just haven't found out about. It's such a big entity that we don't – you know, you don't always know what's going on, sometimes even in the building next door to you or even in the office next door to you. So, you know, if there's somebody out there who's working on something that you think would be part of this, we'd love to hear from you.
And you can call in right now, actually. Listeners, the number to do that is 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. We're talking about the role of locally owned media in their communities. You just heard from Rich Martin, Associate Professor of Journalism and Director of Graduate Studies in the Department of Journalism at Illinois, Mike Howey, City Editor at the News Gazette, Tom Rogers, News Director at WILL. Rich, you talk about other entities doing some of this work. We're actually meeting next Tuesday, WILL and you as faculty here, about the any kind of intersections we might do between the work we've been doing on poverty and the economy and your work. You came to one of our meetings, and we met separately. Tell us a little bit about what kind of role you might see WILL in this work.
Well, I think that there are ways to connect with what you're doing. We certainly would provide links on our website to your stories, to your talk shows, to your newscasts that are related to these issues, and really try to just sort of build a sense of community in that way. You know, if someone comes to our site and sees a link to something that you've done, I see that as very important because, again, this is collaboration, and we talk about building community and trying to engage people. And I think the more engagement there, more ways to connect people with other things that are going on, the better it will be.
Tom, would you talk about the effort that we did this summer called We'll Connect / the Economy and how that – the role of news in that, and then the station's overall role. This is reflects some of the changes that you referred to earlier in this two-year effort where WILL is really examining its role in the communities it serves and taking a hard look at that and making some choices. What does that look like?
Well, as you mentioned, this has sort of been a soul-searching exercise to try to figure out what role public media is going to have in this rapidly changing environment of journalism and you know where we'll all be going. For the last couple of years, as you mentioned, we've worked with the Harwood Foundation to sort of chart our course for you know what our role as a public television, radio, and online operation is going to be, to bring people together to tell stories from the community, and to sort of be a catalyst for change in the community. That means that we've had quite a few meetings within in-house about how we go about this, and We'll Connect was sort of the first product in its infancy of these discussions. For this particular project, where we decided to focus on the impact of the economy on the area, we decided to narrow our focus to three different locations: Champaign County, Macon County, and Vermilion County, and set up listening sessions with both groups of community leaders in those areas and more open meetings with anybody who'd want to stop by. So we did six of those meetings. I think you'd referred to them before. And from those meetings, we got a lot of, you know, opinions, feelings, thoughts from the people who live in those areas and try to make a difference in their communities already. We brought a lot of people together who may not have otherwise talked to each other, you know, noticed that they're doing some of the same types of activities. And from there, while those discussions were going on, we in the news department were searching out some more specific ideas to tell stories from, and another part of this challenge from this project was to, as Richard mentioned, try to tell more stories from the viewpoint of the people who are impacted, that you know, at the base level, people who may not have their voices heard all the time. I think this gave us the ability to seek out more of those people. As mentioned, we want to bring more avenues. You know, we get more avenues for those people to come to us with their ideas, opinions, and thoughts, and you know, with social media and other types of things. We haven't gone that route quite yet, but I'm sure that's down the line, but we were able to find some people who actually have been impacted by the economy and told their stories to us, and that's what wound up with a series of stories that we did back in August.
And then after those stories aired, we let listeners know where they could call in their area to get help if they needed help with anything from rent or just didn't know where the food bank was in their area.
Danville, Decatur. These are all places that have what are called first call for help organizations or something like them. Just open phone line clearinghouses where, you know, somebody with a problem can be connected to a social service agency that's doing that work. They don't need to know exactly where they have to go. They can just state what their problem is, what their concern is, and that agency, the first call for help people, can refer them to an agency. It's part of what's been called the 211 project in a lot of other parts of the country, and Illinois is just sort of getting into that, where communities are setting up where you dial 911 for an emergency, 611 for repair service, 211 is the number you can dial for referral to any sort of group that you may have with a long-term problem that you encounter.
And Illinois is just one of few states that doesn't have that, but there is a legislation pending that might make that.
I believe
service. Something
was passed this year, but now it's up to the organizations to set up those services, and then there may be more legislation that needs to be passed before you have like a working 211 system on your phone.
We have a couple of callers waiting to get in on the conversation. We have a caller from Effingham on line 4. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a letters to the editor writer. Mm-hmm. And I submit things to the News Gazette and had communicated with the that person who takes care of those things. And I write rather elongated about historical and economic things. And he said, of course, the letter was 250 words or less. And it's hard for me to meet that criteria, so I asked for a column, a citizen's column, and was rejected fairly well out of hand. And I just wondered if that is a venue that might perhaps become doable with newspapers, and that a citizen who, you know, can and will write more and a column, I don't know what your column limitations are. I never found that out. But the here in Effingham, I write quite a bit, and they print everything. And my last column was 1,200 words, and they put it all in. So I wonder if that's some sort of thing that could be offered to citizens in general. And I might add that I write from the far left and conservatism, and I've gotten lots of comments. But the thing is, some of those things need to be said, and the flowing behind the conservative viewpoints, I think there should be an alternative. Do you have anything like that that is doable, or how I might be able to get in on the process?
Well, I'm going to answer that before Mike. I can see Mike's head spinning. He's a city editor, not an editorial page writer, I believe. But let me see what WILL has. We have something called the Public Square, which is three minutes radio commentary open to any person who'd like to say something about anything. There's criteria on our website. It airs every Friday at 4:45 p.m. and 6:45 p.m. It's, again, a three-minute radio commentary open to folks. You can find out about that on our website, will.illinois.edu. Go to the AM and you'll see Public Square, and there's information there. So that would be for broadcast. That's what we offer. Mr. Howie, what about that? You do have guest commentaries in the News Gazette.
Guest commentaries, and I am not directly involved in these, so my knowledge is not going to be the best knowledge about them. But I know that they are arranged in advance on a column-by-column basis. The number of regular columnists we have is set probably as much by space limitations as it is by anything else. For what it's worth, to the caller, 1,200 words is about 40 inches of space, and our reporters don't get 1,200 words very often for the stories that they're going to write. So I can't say that it's terribly unusual that a 1,200-word column didn't find favor, particularly if you're talking about a 1,200-word column on a regular basis. I'm not going to be much help beyond that because, as Kimberly noted, I'm not part of the editorial department. My job is to cover our news reporters. So I'm not going to be of much help here in answering your question, I'm afraid.
Well, one other thing I had, that I communicate with a lot of newspapers, and the Journal Gazette and the Times Courier in Mattoon have a page opposite page four where people with they don't have to reveal their names along with their – they have these surnames, I guess, that they can – and they print these. And it's a right-left sort of thing, and it's very enlightening, I think. And do you have anything like that or a prospect of something like that?
I've not seen that, so I'm not terribly familiar with it. But I can tell you that our general policy is to not allow – anonymity in certainly in opinion pieces, and in general in news reporting, the rules governing our use of anonymous sources are very limiting. They're only permitted in certain very specific circumstances.
Yes. Well, these people do. There's anonymity is the basis. Probably none has ever a few sign their name or include their names. But very few, and the most graphic of those comments, usually from the conservative camp, and they always have their blog name. But nevertheless, I mean, I never chose anonymity at any point. If I'm not willing to sign my name, then I'm not worthy to participate, and that's how I. But nevertheless, the I can write shorter pieces, but I do not know whether or not, my liberal left-wing comments are, set aside. So, well, thank you, sir, for your answers, and I appreciate the show. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. I just also want to let the caller know that the UCIMC has a paper, The Public Eye, that might take your commentary. So if you have web access, you can go to Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center website and look there. We do have another caller from Bloomington. Caller on line one, are you there?
Yes, good morning. How is everybody today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
You know, I don't know why people need to pick a left or right in between. I go by common sense. The gentleman was calling earlier. I would tend to think that if there's issues and whatever, points of interest he's got an issue with, he should either take it up, A, with either that person or that group or, like whether it be, a politician or a group or something, and take it up with them. And B, because it's more productive that way. And I think that's the problem with this country. We've gotten kind of where our kickback don't do anything. The media, I don't want to say I don't trust it, but I think it's very slanted and you don't get the facts. Or if you do, they're kind of twisted around to favor or, to make a story out of it. Because let's be honest, I think if anything out there was written about a lot of the stuff in life, it'd be boring, wouldn't it? I mean, their whole object is to sell a paper or sell an item, whether it be in a newsprint or on the online bit or on TV, especially on TV. And I tend to think that, if you yourself take the initiative and do the research, like myself, on a lot of the issues out there, you'll find out a lot different than what is being reported. Am I not correct?
Okay, that's a great question. You mentioned fairness and objectivity and credibility, I think I heard, or trust. Where do you get your news right now?
I get it from several areas, whether it be the internet, the newsprint, newspaper or TV stations. But I'm kind of a practical person. I don't look at it like, I mean, I look at the big picture. Everybody's got their little issues. Like, some people have an issue with abortion. Some people have an issue with the health care system. And some people might have something with the military. I look at the whole big picture, and it gets complicated. It's mind-boggling. It's very mind. Just with the health care system alone, it's mind-boggling. The problem is they bring out, like, for instance, the health care system, when somebody wants to say, okay, this is going to take care of this, this, and this. But then they don't say what is going to happen to the rest of it, what the outcome, what the pros and cons are. I always go, because I'm a contractor, I always go off the pros and cons. I mean, and let the clients go wherever they may. And I think if the government starts doing that, say, okay, this is what the cost is going to be, whether it be in the monetary value or other issues, and let the people decide. The problem is this country's gotten away from the people, and it seems like we elect a bunch of people that go in there and kind of turn everything upside down. And when there's stuff that's reported, it's either leaked by one side or the other. I used to be a Democrat, then I went to a Republican and got off of that, and I, in the last decade or so, have voted, whether it be independent or Green Party, solely for the reason that these two guys have had a chance in 30 years. I've been voting since 1979, or 75, I'm sorry, and I have yet to see a decent person come out of the White House. So, and I've been here in Social Security for 30, 40 years, so I don't know about you folks. It disgusts me, but at the same time, I don't look at the news. They're in there for sensationalism. And by the way, I used to live in California, so close to Hollywood. I could tell you a lot of this stuff that you hear out there, especially in California, is just, it's twisted around so they can sell something. And that's my problem.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'll get off. I know I'm long-winded. I didn't mean to be. So God bless you guys, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. Well, there were some things I heard in there I want to ask our group of guests here. He talked about health care, and there's lots of information. There's plans out there. People say it says this. Other people say it says that. You know, what role does the media have in helping us as citizens sort out an issue like health care, which affects all of us? And what about this issue of believing that the media has, you know, a viewpoint or a bias? What's a citizen to do who wants to know, you know, how do I vote? How do I protect, you know, someone who doesn't have health care, or protect my own health care? What's the role of media, or and specifically locally owned media, in that?
Well, I guess at the base of everything is to get the facts, to make sure the facts are correct. And he did mention, you know, he knew that the media was presenting the facts. He just didn't think that they were being organized in a proper way, that they may be skewed or slanted. That's always a difficult way to present the facts, is to try to make it in a both a clear, easy to understand format and to be free of any personal biases that there might be. Well, we also have an editing process. I know the News Gazette does, and most newspapers do. Many radio stations do. Public radio is a big believer in not having just one person write a story and throw it on the air. It's you hopefully can vet your copy with other people who may be able to point out a lack of clarity or something that may be construed the wrong way, and hopefully the end product is a story that's both factual and understandable and something that everybody can use.
You know, what I use is when I hear speeches, especially when people are stumping for the office, and I love it when you see in the News Gazette a national story that said, here's what the president said or this candidate said, and here's the facts of what they said. That seems to me really useful. Now, that's not done on a local level, but the local paper is running that AP story, for example. So what about that? What is the role of local if we don't have the person power to look at all these bills, sit down and read them and say, this is true, this isn't, or what have you? What can we do locally around, let's say, healthcare, for example? When I say what can we do, I guess I mean what's the role of local media in how healthcare plays out locally? Beyond what you've already said, is there anything more?
Well, something that could be done, I suppose, so could be, again, you know, we've been talking about trying to find the people who are, you know, impacted in the most basic way to the problems. See it from their perspective, you know, get an idea of what they face, and outline it, and then try to find the facts that in healthcare legislation that would impact them. That's one way of looking at one way to present a story on healthcare in particular.
Well, I want to ask you all three a very tough – I think it's a tough question. But before I do, I want Tom to talk a little bit about Health Smile Healthy, which was a local dental effort that we were involved in. News was involved in. WILO was involved in. Healthcare Consumers, another group. But before that, I want you – others, don't mind, if you don't mind thinking about this. Is there ever an opportunity – can you ever see a day when journalism students at the U of I, reporters from the News Gazette, maybe citizen reporters at the Public Eye – news people here at WILO would get together and would say, here's a community need that the community has identified and is working on. We're going to work together on that need. By the end of this time, the community will be different in this way. Is there a role for local media to have that mindset? And before you answer that, Tom, when we talk about not just reporting but other things, can you briefly tell what role we had with Smile Healthy in the community and how that effort was a little different?
Well, again, I think just like some of the projects we've talked about before, the impact of the economy, the News Gazette and U of I's poverty project, it started with funding from a foundation. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and another foundation was giving grants to stations to explore health issues in their community. That was the only caveat, or the only restriction on the funding was to, you know, find the health issue that's important to your community. We brought people in, asked them what their opinions were, and surprisingly enough, we found a topic that I don't think anybody had really thought about at the time was the lack of proper dental care among people in the community, among children, among elderly, among low-income people. And so we pursued that project over a period of time. We went out to try to find stories. We solicited people's stories on their attempts to get proper dental care and the barriers to it, lack of funding, lack of dentists who will take Medicaid, that sort of thing. We presented those stories, and at the same time, we also provided sort of a clearinghouse for people to try to link up with assistance in getting proper dental care. We had a website that was set up and listed resources, was sort of a storage place for the stories. You could go back and listen to the stories as they came in. And sometimes, you know, in a couple of the stories we did, we even had a little fun with the idea. We went to the first dental museum in the country and talked about the history of dentistry as well. It was a fairly broad project that did lead, I think, to the very least, to people, more people, more decision makers thinking about the need for dental health, and led to more programs that address the issue.
And while we were doing this reporting, we were working with Children's Dental Access to provide dental screenings for kids who didn't have that. And so our reporting was sort of linked up with this community effort that had already been working on improving dental access, and the lead was the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. So I'm sorry, callers, we weren't going to get to your call. We only have 3 minutes left. I appreciate that you were willing to call in. Let me ask that big question back of our three guests, Mike Howie, city editor of the News Gazette, Tom Rogers, director of news here at WILL, and Rich Martin, associate professor of journalism at Illinois. What about this idea here, of consciously saying, hey, if we report on things, you know, with our editorial, the fact we make the decisions on what the news is, but we're doing this in this context where we're putting a stake in the ground saying, hey, you know, if we put our reporting together in this community context, we could probably move the community forward on this. Can you ever see that happening?
Well, I think that's what news organizations do all the time. I don't think that they try to do it, or I'm uncomfortable with news organizations that try to do it as in an advocacy role. I think we do put stakes in the ground and say this is an important issue. We're writing about economic disparity. We're writing about housing problems. We're writing about people who don't have enough food, people who don't have shelter. I think those are stories that we do think are important. The the distinction I guess I draw is where the traditional journalism, meaning the news gathering part of the operation, becomes an advocate for a particular cause or a particular organization. That's where I get very uncomfortable and try not to step over that line. Certainly, editorial pages and opinion writers have the certain leeway to be advocates, but you try to be down the line and try to present the facts and tell the stories. But again, every time we do a story, we're putting a stake in the ground.
And Mike,
I'm not sure I could have said it any better. Frankly, there is a real danger in advocacy because it implies a choice about whom you're going to advocate on behalf of or with or for. And our role is to gather information and present it. I don't believe that it is to become an advocate because then neutrality and a lack of bias goes out the window. And that opens your entire reporting, I believe, to question.
And Tom, I guess you get the final word. You got about a minute.
And I think that is an argument, a battle that's being fought time and again, is where does journalism end and advocacy begin? That's probably been the basis of many arguments in newsrooms all over the world over time. And that's something that's not going to end as we head into new technology. It's going to take our product in different places and change the business model. I think we're seeing with the financial problems that face newspapers and a lot of broadcast media, it's going to be something that we're going to keep arguing over time and in new arenas, I guess.
Well, we had some of that today in our discussion, and I appreciate our guests, Mike Howey, city editor for the News Gazette, Tom Rogers, WILL News Director, and Rich Martin, Associate Professor of Journalism at Illinois. I'm your guest host, Kimberly Cronick, Director of Community Engagement.